Okay, so I'm sitting here with yeah, an experienced well, you work in a small school with multiple hats on. That's my
I do.
understanding of
Yes,
it.
that's right. Yeah.
We've agreed to have a conversation about your experience of working in a school setting with in the context of this, questions about the national curriculum and the assessment systems, and why there are so many children that are not coping with it, and what changes might be needed. Obviously you're living in the thick of it. So do you want to just introduce yourself, and we'll just sort of see where the conversation goes.
I teach a small rural primary school in the so we have four classes and the mixed stage classes. So we've got a nursery and reception class, year one and two class, three and four class, and a five and six class.
Okay.
So I teach part time, and then the rest of the time, I'm part of SLT. I'm the Senko, and then part of my SLT role is kind of pastoral well-being, senior mental health lead. Yeah, so that's me, and I've been here 19 years. I've been teaching for 20 years.
Right. Okay. So a long time. So you were saying just before we came on the call that you've really seen some changes over that period of time in your role and what you're having to manage.
Yeah, so I've noticed certainly since COVID there's been a lot of this, but since the national curriculum changed and a lot of the skills got kind of pushed down year groups. So something you would have expected a year six to be able to do, and now we're expecting it either a year three or four to be able to do. So a lot of those kind of things have been pushed down.
That's academic skills you're talking about.
Academic skills,
Academic
yeah.
skills. So you would have
Academic
expected a year
skills.
six now, and that year three was supposed to do it
Yeah,
all.
yeah.
Yeah,
So
okay.
academic skills have been kind of forced down. So children are expected to do more younger. And what we're finding is some children find that really difficult. So kind of from an academic side, those children, there are some children that would have struggled anyway.
Anyway,
But
yeah.
then because those skills have been pushed down, those children aren't ready for that, and
Yeah.
they're struggling even more than they would do.
Yeah.
That then has a knock-on effect for their social, emotional, and mental health. So the children that have got the learning need, they're struggling with the learning, but then also they've got all like they're lacking self-esteem because they think they can't do things
Yeah.
because things are difficult for them.
Yeah.
So you've kind of got all that part going on. But also, we've noticed, and again, a lot since COVID, but it was before that, we're noticing we're having to support parents a lot more.
Yeah.
And signpost to different services. And we've been having this conversation today, actually, that actually we can do what we can do within 6.5 hours of a school day. But actually, fundamentally, we need to support the families and the parents to be able to make changes and support their children with the social, emotional, and mental health at home. Because if we're not able to do that, then what we're doing within a school day isn't having that long-term impact
Yeah.
because nothing's fundamentally changing kind of at home. Yeah, so we find my role as Senko, I deal a lot more. I think with the Senko role, you're looking at teaching and learning. Obviously, that's our bread and butter at school, and we've got to get that right, and we're supporting the children. We can make adaptions to lessons and all that. All that's kind of going on, and we're very skilled at school now, both teachers and teaching assistants, of making adaptions to lessons to the learning part. The bit that's been the bigger learning curve, if you will, is kind of identifying that actually more and more children are presenting with social, emotional, and mental health issues, and more from a younger age. So some of that can be linked to learning, some of it might be linked to trauma. So we're seeing a lot more children that have experienced trauma and attachment issues. It might be something that's happened that the parent, either younger parents or parents that maybe that need that support because they're not sure how to parent these children. So there's that going on. Again, parents who have then got their own worries, their own mental health issues, or their own maybe worries about money and things like that. That can then not by any kind of they're not telling the children about it, but the children are feeling that and living that
Picking
on a
up those
day to
anxieties.
day.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely picking up the anxieties.
Yeah.
I think with our older children, so the key stage two children, there's so much more social media now, so there's a lot of maybe the year fives and sixes are exposed to that when they shouldn't be, but a lot of them have phones or they're seeing things on YouTube or they're hearing things that they wouldn't necessarily have maybe heard till they got to secondary school. So you've got there's a lot of that that's kind of being almost pushed down because of the whole social media
It's a real
kind of.
social cultural shift, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And we're
Perfect storming.
expecting these, you're kind of expecting these 10 and 11 year olds to deal with more teenage kind of issues that they wouldn't have come across until they were, another year or two older. So we have more children that are kind of really self-conscious the way they look that we've, and I've been doing this a long time now, and that's been a certain shift and change. You might have had one or two before, whereas that's more of a, oh, well, I don't want to do this because I don't look like this person that I've seen online. So there's a lot more of that. And then, yeah, and general anxieties about just general things, really. So we have more children that maybe struggle to come to school sometimes, and it's kind of spending the time with those children. And we at our school, we're really kind of trauma informed and attachment aware, and we try and take that real nurturing approach. And we have really good relationships with our children, and our whole behaviour policy is it's not a behaviour policy, it's a relationship policy. So we do a lot of work with all of our staff, both teachers and teaching assistants. We do lots of work every year on training on kind of being attachment aware and making sure our staff are kind of have got the biggest amount of knowledge they can have, but also spending the time with the children to build those relationships to make them feel safe and secure, because we recognize that if the children don't feel safe and secure at school, then no learning is going to take place. And we're really passionate about that here. But that does take a lot of time. And some children, we can do that at a class level. Other children need kind of group intervention for that, and other children need that one-to-one support and need that on a daily basis and on an ongoing basis to get them into school, get them settled, get them ready for learning, and then we can move on, and they need those check-ins
Do
throughout
you
the day.
have, I mean, I've been really intrigued by the sort of assessment because it feels like the National Curriculum brought in this huge sort of heavy load of assessment and tracking and yet missed this piece after early years. I wonder, because you're doing, obviously doing a lot of work thinking about social emotional development there. Do you have any tools that you find are useful when you're thinking about children, post foundation stage?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for our school, which is easier to do in a small school, is we just know our
You
children
just
really,
know them
really
really
well.
well.
And because we know them really well, and I think being Senko, who teaches the youngest children, I know what I'm seeing when I come in. And I always have this thing, show me a child up form and I can tell you what they're going to be like in year six. And it usually comes true. And I think because I know them well, so I'm kind of looking out for it, and we get to know our children really well, and we get to know our families really well. And those kind of slight changes in behaviour is what we're looking out for, and we're really tuned into that. And that's what then kind of all our staff are kind of trained to look out for that. And we're very open as a staff, we're constantly having conversations about children. So it might be even in the staff room at lunchtime or playtime, oh, such and such a body's coming a bit wobbly today. And then somebody else might say, oh, well, I noticed that last week when I had this conversation. And we kind of build up the picture that way. So not really a formal way
It's
of doing
more
business,
informally, so
informally. And
no.
then that might then prompt a conversation myself as Senko, or maybe actually we say to the parents, do you want to come and have a chat? Is everything all right? We've noticed this. Is there any help you need? Or and we tend to go with it that way. And we do have this very much an open door policy, and our parents are really good at kind of emailing in to either myself or the head and saying, actually, I'm really struggling with this, or I found this a problem. Can we
So
talk
you're
about
really
it?
sort of thinking outside the walls of your classroom in terms of your thinking. Now, are you noticing, with it, because it's an awful lot to pack into not many hours in a day there, are you noticing that, or do you feel like you've got time to address these social emotional needs? Are you able to kind of, certainly, I used to be a teacher and I used to feel that we were aiming to have children kind of fairly emotionally balanced as they left primary school. That was the kind of, and the everything else was a bit of a bonus. That was, sort of resilience and about, ability to handle a few of the challenges and getting on with people. But what I've seen in terms of is that that priority gets squeezed out. And I
Yeah,
don't know
so
what your how what your experience is.
I think you're talking to me as a teacher from always think we're quite a unique school here. And because our head, she comes from an early years background, which I think massively helps with this. And our approach has always been kind of this nurturing family feel school, and that is our number one priority. Yes, teaching and learning is up there, but our number one priority is, do we have happy children that we're going to send off out into the big wide world, having had a broad and balanced curriculum? And our head, and again, this comes from the head
I'm sure
teacher.
that's right. Yeah.
And our head has always said, yes, they have to do the stats, but if I had a choice, we wouldn't do them. So she doesn't want us to do loads of SATs prep for them, because because actually the SATs are a test of how well school have done the teaching, not the children. And she's very protective of that. And we try here, and I guess this is not the case in the wider
No, I
kind of,
think it isn't. No.
but here we're very much about a holistic approach. So we want our children to have been to the theatre. We want our children to experience climbing a mountain. We want them to go out and play in the snow. We want them to go and jump in muddy puddles. And we're very much of a kind of a, yes, the teaching and learning is really important, but our head really values
That
other
whole
areas,
person.
that whole person
I think
approach.
it's
And
really
that
important
kind
what
of
you said there, because I mean, I remember when I trained, because I trained to be a junior teacher. So and this was a long time ago, but it was quite a shock. Sort of several years into my career, I suddenly realized that I had learned sort of junior teaching, but I hadn't learned, and I only really noticed it when I first had my own children, that I actually hadn't been introduced to early years. And it struck me when I realized that you could be a teacher of Key Stage 2 or Key Stage 3 or Key Stage 4, really having no idea, being polite, but blunt, not having any idea really about how children actually develop. And obviously the science is really clear now about how children develop in the context of relationships. And so who your senior leader, what their training is very, very significant
It is,
to this. Because if your
definitely. And
focus has you only been trained in teaching, making sure you've achieved your English grades or your maths grades, you might not have even know what you, not know what you don't know, isn't it? It's unconscious unconscious stuff.
I'd agree with you there. And I think there are other schools that I know locally where actually, no, the most important is that we get it's reading and math, reading, writing, and math, and we've got to hammer that. And we're doing SATs practice for them after Christmas and all the rest of it. That is not us. That comes from the head teacher and their ethos. And our ethos is kind of that holistic. Yes, teaching and learning is important, and we have really high standards, and we're teaching the children, but we're pushing that every day. But our holistic approach is that we wouldn't not go to the theatre, or if it's snowing, our head will just say, right, Shelby, math lesson, we're all going out to play in the snow. And that is not, sorry, not yet. Sorry, that's my little boy who comes to this school. He's I'm on a meeting. I don't know, half an hour. But he's just coming complaining. He's fed up with our school.
Multi roles,
Oh
multitasking.
yeah, I know. So he's now looking a sad face through the door, really. He'll go in, bless him. So I can't remember what I was saying now, but yeah.
So it
What is
sounds
your question?
like, in spite, in a way, in spite of the national curriculum, in your school, because you've got a leadership that is experienced with thinking about how children develop, you've kind of you're managing to sort of do this stuff anyway, in a way, yourself. Where some schools, they don't feel like they've got the confidence or the permission to do that. But so nonetheless, so they're inviting views on it. Is there any changes? Do you feel like it would be helpful if they made some shifts in national curriculum? What would you want to see shift?
I think there needs to be, like you say, a much, and I suppose Ofsted have tried to do this with the deep dive one, and it doesn't really work, that actually all subjects are equal, because as we all know, not everybody's good at reading, writing, and maths, and you've got to be able to if that's all we're concentrating on at primary school, you're potentially leaving at 11 thinking that you're a failure, basically, that
Yes.
if you can't, if you're not
Yes.
good at those things. But actually, you might be a talented artist, you might be really great at sport, you might be really a great singer or whatever. And it's kind of getting that balance back that actually, yes, reading, writing, and maths are really important because we need to be able to do that to function
Yeah.
as a society.
Yeah.
But let's celebrate all those other strengths.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's taking that, and it's difficult because the reason there are stats is because schools have to be judged. But then in what other profession are people held accountable by, that kind of
Such a
thing? And I
narrow,
think, yeah, I think really the trust needs to go back into school. It's the trust needs to go back in that actually these people have been trained for 4 years or done a PGCE or whatever. There's continual professional development. The head teacher has got all this experience. So trust that actually the process that actually they're going to give the children a good rounded education without being judged from the stats, I suppose. So I'd say probably more of a balance, but I think certainly with the social emotional mental health, and I know there was a PSHE curriculum review. But it's kind of it's putting that on a level as it of importance.
Yes, and I mean, my sense of PSHE is it's not for me. It's not quite got what EYFS, because it's very topic based, isn't it? And it's not tracking. It's not tracking whether the skills of do I understand myself and be able to put my thoughts and feelings into words, and do I understand what somebody else is thinking? Can I problem solve a complex problem? Those are skills. I think we can track them, but we're not tracking them. When we talk about bullying in PSHE, or we talk about how the weekend, that might be a tool to get there, but it's not the skills themselves.
I agree. And it's kind of giving it's if we could prepare children for kind of giving them like a skill set and like a toolkit of kind of
Absolutely.
when I come across if I feel this emotion, these are the things I can do about it, and that's all right to feel that, and this is what I can do to feel better, or cat. When I get maybe when you're in year six, when I get to secondary school, I might come across this situation. These are the things I can do about it, and kind of giving them the tools to be able to survive in this digital world. That because we always say to about our children, they're so well nurtured and loved here that we get to the end of the year six, and you think, oh, what are we sending them off
Yes.
out into?
What are
And
we
it's
sending them on to? Because
For most children, you think, yeah, they'll be fine. But some children, especially the children with SEN, you think, oh my goodness, what are we sending them to? And are they going to be okay? And it is a genuine worry.
Yes. And I have seen, say that professionally, I've seen that sometimes there's like really good sort of supportive practice, but in some ways it's such a shock when you move to secondary, because that level of support isn't there, and they're not used to it. And so it's more, it's a pretty tough adjustment. So I'm just, oh, I had a thought and it's disappeared from my head. I know what it was. It was like, so I think in come I've done a couple of these interviews, and one of the things that's come up is that if we were to suggest, and that there was, by a miracle, social emotional development became more valued on a par with, or perhaps even given top priority for primary at least, what do you think would be involved for training the workforce, let's say, to be able to do that? Because early years practice is very different from sort of more formal teaching style, isn't it? How confident would you be that, like, if we passed you a group of professionals who perhaps hadn't worked in this way, that you could help them develop these sorts of skills?
So I think it depends on I think you've got to get it from the top. So you've got to get the head teacher 100% first, because again, you live and breathe whatever your head's thing is, whatever side of school, that is kind of that's your top level, isn't it? And your senior leadership team.
So
So
we
you've
want to
got
make
to get
lots of
them.
early years heads. We want to promote
Exactly.
them,
It was.
move
It'd
them
make
into
a massive
secondary
put.
education.
Put the early years heads and early years teachers in charge of secondary. That'd change everything, wouldn't it?
That would change everything, would,
I think. I think you have to get it right at the top level first, and then when you can get that, I think it'd take people, because I know here that we've had years kind of, your staff would have to want to do it because you can't do to someone. You'd have to have everyone would have to want to do it. And then I think there's a few things you could do. You could have you could have kind of experience, you could move staff around, so you've got kind of staff get to experience what is it like on a day-to-day basis in the early
Yes.
years. You could do
Yes.
that by training your staff up. And I don't think it'd be good enough to do like a one-off kind of training day. I think
No,
it's something that
no.
you need to do as a
Yeah.
process over time, and maybe do it as like a year-long program or maybe a 2-year-long program where you've got you kind of have your initial kind of right, this is the training for a couple of hours, and then right, what we're going to do, we're going to try this little bit, come back, we're going to review it. I don't think it's a change you can make overnight. It's going to have to be small steps,
More steps in there, yeah.
small steps, and kind of, I mean, some heads might say no, right, shh, we're doing this, and then you kind of find people that are on board, the ones that aren't will eventually drift away. But to get people totally on board, you
It's,
need to
and
do it
it's
in
to
really
understand
small
what that
steps.
skill is, first of all, you know, because even like the idea of what does it mean, the skill of understanding myself and other, and how you actually can sort of function in the world, surprisingly enough, without necessarily knowing how to do that. You know, you could be
And I
quite,
think,
you can be an adult and you can get through your life without really knowing the skills.
and I think you'd have to start again, going back to kind of where you'd have to start this at like teacher training college. Obviously, you'd have to have the input there. But then you've kind of got two lots of people. You've got people that are new teachers that they don't know any different, so they're probably the easier ones to kind of get on board. And then you've got people that have been doing this for a long time that kind of don't see the benefit of it, that have been through the school system themselves as kind of a very authoritative. Do, and then that's then become their style. I'm not talking about here now, I'm talking like wider. That's then become their style, and that's almost a reteaching yourself. And at what point can you have to be
Re-educate.
able to do that for yourself first? Because if you can't do it for yourself, then how can you then do that for the children?
Yeah, and I this is why I personally feel the tracking issue is quite important. Getting some good tools that, so I've been experimenting with some of these tools to see what, you know, just to understand for myself. But once you see the tools and you see, oh my goodness, this there really is a skill gap. Now, okay, so there is a skill gap. Most teachers do, they do know kind of how to put a plan together to address a gap. But what we haven't done is notice the size of the gap between where we want kids to be and where they're actually at. And it seems to me that if we could get that piece understood, then probably we would be able to unleash quite a lot of creativity and how to bring those skills on, you know, both in the teaching staff as well as in the people.
And like you say, you've got a really skilled workforce out there that will find it's kind of been one being able to give the freedom and the time to say, right, you can do this for however long in a day, and that's a big thing. But also, like you say, having the adults to be able to do it as well, because that's a massive moment, school funding and not having enough funding to have enough adults and all the rest of it. Because to be able to teach children these skills, the most needy children need that adult support, because you need that co-regulation, don't you, before you self-regulate.
Absolutely.
So it needs to be kind of a, yes, you need to train the adults, but you need the adults in the first place. So it's not
To
necessarily
hold it.
a cheap, quick fix, because you need those adults that can do that piece of work.
I
Does
think
that make
there
sense
is
about
quite an
the
interesting thing though with, so you know, there's something quite strange. I mean, I suppose you don't see it so much as in a primary, in a small school, but when we really age, you know, put children only by age, then we miss the fact that there's children, you know, who are developmentally actually in very different places. So when we mix up ages and we have more mature children supporting less mature children, and the teacher's got some freedom about how they work that, then actually I think you can bring quite a lot of these skills on, but you've got to
Yeah.
give them the freedom to decide how to use the time that they've got in that room to build those skills. And if you don't, you've got to tell them that those are the skills you want to see
Yeah,
building, rather than
definitely. Yeah.
telling them they've got to get them through the maths curriculum.
Yeah, I agree there. Yeah,
And then a lot of
it's
behaviour management becomes quite different. It's not just trying to get that child to sit still and not
yeah.
disrupt the others. It's
Yeah.
how do we use the time with these children in this room to engage everybody and wanting to be
Yeah.
there, you know. And then
Yeah,
because then, you
exactly.
know.
Yeah. Because then actually, if you can get that right, you're not then doing behaviour management,
Yeah,
are you?
exactly.
Because it's everything's how it needs to be for everyone to be in the right place for learning. So yeah.
And it really helps to have a bit of a developmental insight, but it's not, in a way, it's not rocket science. When you
No,
pick
it
it
isn't.
up, you know, it's kind of, oh, okay, I think I get that. It was.
And like I say, we've done a lot of training on like ACEs and trauma. And once you've done that training a few times, you know, with your kind of thinking about the way the brain develops and things, everyone goes, oh, right, yeah, that makes total sense now. So
Total sense,
it's
yeah.
like I say, it's not a difficult thing to understand. People just need
No.
the time and the space to be able to access that, don't they?
Exactly. And then the other piece of that is, which you touched on at the beginning, is that it seems to me that parents also need help to understand what those milestones are, because we've kind of not been te we're not teaching those milestones, the sort of services that we're doing it. And if we helped the parent, parent community feel valued in their role in bringing those skills on, then kind of some of the advice that we might, professionally give would make more sense, really. You know, if you want your child to progress on these social emotional milestones, this is why we advise this rather than tell them to do this and not that. You know, we've got to give them a deeper understanding.
And I always have this same conversation in my head. I just wish that all parents, when they had a baby, were made to do kind of like some kind of parenting course that kind of gives them the clues, because you kind of given you've got this baby, haven't you? You go home and you just
And you're not
do
told
your best
anything.
knowing,
No
and
way.
you're only going off your own parenting, probably, aren't you? And bits of advice come in, but if we could, even if you could catch them when they get to nursery or reception and get them to engage with, well, you know, if you did this, this would
Interesting.
happen, then actually we probably our services, like NHS services, probably wouldn't be as overwhelmed and stretched
No, I
as they
totally
are
agree with
now.
you. I totally agree with you. Yeah. We'll have to talk about eye matter, because that's what we've been working on, but we've not sure. This is our first conversation, isn't it? So it's, but yeah, absolutely. That's exactly where I think we need to go. And it's not rocket science. It's just about, there's been no structure to build that up, that's been there before. So listen, I'm very aware that you've got lots to do, and your child's in the background saying,
Yeah, I
Mom,
want
need to go home. Thank you ever so much for talking with
You're
me.
welcome.
And we can have another conversation, but thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
All right, thanks,
Okay.
Kathy.
Take care.
Bye.
All right
Bye.
then. Bye. Bye.